Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Medicare, one of the most popular programs in the United States, is about to turn 50. On July 30th, 1965, President Lyndon B. Johnson signed legislation for Medicare and Medicaid. At the time, he said, quote, "This program is not just a blessing for older Americans. It's a test for all Americans, a test of our willingness to work together," end quote. Today, Medicare includes 46 million people ages 65 and older and 9 million adults younger than 65 who qualify because of a permanent disability. Nearly half of all people on Medicare have four or more chronic conditions. Nearly one-third have a cognitive mental impairment, and about one-third are functionally impaired. When Medicare was established back in 1965, only 44% of all seniors were insured. Nearly one-third of all seniors were living in poverty. Today, one out of every two Medicare recipients lives on an income of less than $23,000 a year. In recent years, the popular program has been blamed for the budget deficit and threatened with cuts and privatization. So on today's Your Call, we are discussing the history of Medicare, its accomplishments, major challenges facing the program, what is its past, present, and future. Today, I am joined by Dr. James Kahn, Professor of Health Policy and Epidemiology at UCSF and past president of the California Chapter of Physicians for a National Health Program. Dr. Kahn's work focuses on the use of cost-effectiveness analysis to inform decision-making in public health and medicine. And Dr. Kahn joins me in studio. Hi, thank you for coming in. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you. Thanks for having me. I think the first time I was in this studio was about 7 years ago. Nice to see you again.
I think it was. That was a while back. Well, I'm glad you're back, and I'm glad we're talking about this important issue and the really good work that you're doing, especially when you look at cost and the push for Medicare for all. And we are also joined by Dr. Marcia Angel, senior lecturer in social medicine at Harvard Medical School and former editor-in-chief of the New England Journal of Medicine. Dr. Angel is author of the book, The Truth About the Drug Companies, How They Deceive Us and What to Do About It. And Dr. Angel joins us from Santa Fe, New Mexico. Hi, Dr. Angel. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks. It's good to be with you.
Well, it's great to have you, and I know that you are joining us during your vacation, and we greatly appreciate you taking some time out of your vacation to join us, because I know you really, really care about this issue. So how are you reflecting as we are about to hit the 50th birthday of Medicare, and it's about to get a lot of media attention?
Well, it's a great success. Medicare was a terrific success. It doesn't mean it's perfect. It does need to be improved, and I have some specific suggestions for doing it, but it is so much better than the private sector for delivering health care that there's truly no comparison. It really is a terrific program.
And it is covering a lot of people, Dr. Kahn, 46 million people over the age of 65 and 9 million people who qualify because of a permanent disability. How are you reflecting on the importance of Medicare?
Well, I agree with Dr. Angel. Medicare has been a huge success in addressing the healthcare needs, mainly of the elderly population, and resulting in a great reduction in poverty in that population. It's also demonstrated that in the United States, we can run a healthcare insurance program with very low administrative overhead. Less than 2% of Medicare dollars go toward administration. And this is of particular interest to me because I've been doing research over the years on what we spend on administrative costs in healthcare, and we spend about $350 billion per year more than we need to administer healthcare. And that's a big number. So how does that relate to individuals? That's about $1,200 per person per year, about $4,800 per family per year just on paperwork.
So it's a highly efficient system. Again, less than 2% of all costs go to administrative fees.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely. There's a part of Medicare that is not as appealing in recent years, and that's a shift to Medicare Part C, which is a capitated version. And in theory, that could work okay, except because the private insurance companies are involved, there are added costs. And the only way that that hasn't collapsed is that the federal government has been subsidizing that portion to allow the private insurance companies to make money while doing that. And that is a direction in Medicare that is worrisome and I think should be decreased over time back toward the very successful original model for Medicare using fee-for-service.
And later in the show, we will talk about why Medicare is so efficient when it comes to administrative costs and why the for-profit health insurance industry is not. We'll talk about that later in the show, but let's spend more time talking about what Medicare does well. Dr. Angel, what about the kind of health care people actually get from Medicare?
Well, the thing about Medicare that is so successful, really, is that everyone in that age group is covered. They don't slice and dice. They don't say, well, you get sick too often, or our package doesn't cover you. You sign up, and everybody gets the full program of Medicare. Now, I think the program should be broader. It should cover long-term care, for example. But still, within the benefit package, they don't try to get rid of people who actually might get sick, which is what the private insurance industry does. Mm. They're trying to slice and dice, to fragment, to get rid of people who are high risk, that is, who might actually get sick, and just take care of healthy people. Medicare can't do that. Everybody is in, nobody is out. And that's the strength of Medicare. It is also what enables it to be so efficient, as Dr. Khan says. You don't have a lot of hundreds of private health insurance companies that are driven by seeking profits, treating sick people like hot potatoes and trying to get rid of them. And in order to do that, it takes a lot of overhead, and of course, you don't have profits in Medicare. So it's an extraordinarily efficient system that actually takes care of everybody who qualifies.
And Dr. Khan, there was a good piece about Medicare and how it affects people in Ocala, Florida. And Ginger Carroll, the CEO of the West Marion Community Hospital there, said hip replacements, knee replacements, all of these irregular heartbeats, things like that would not happen without Medicare. And these people would not live as long. They wouldn't be as healthy. Can you add to that? I mean, do you think people who are not on Medicare realize how important it is to those who are on it?
Well, it's critical. You know, over the last several decades, we've made huge strides in the technical side of medicine and our ability to control and manage chronic diseases such as orthopedic problems like hip replacement, as you mentioned, but also cardiac problems and so on. And all of that technological advancement isn't very useful if people can't get coverage, can't see doctors. And Medicare has made it so much easier for people to find and keep a doctor and get those therapies. And that's why we've seen such improvements in outcomes in those diseases.
Dr. James Khan is professor of health policy and epidemiology at UCSF and past president of the California chapter of Physicians for a National Health Program. Dr. Marcia Angel is senior lecturer in social medicine at Harvard Medical School, former editor-in-chief of the New England Journal of Medicine, and author of The Truth About the Drug Companies, How They Deceive Us and What to Do About It. Today, we are talking about the 50th anniversary of Medicare. It's one of the most popular programs in the United States, regardless of political affiliation. I just read that over 91% of people believe that it should be sustained and even expanded. So if you are on Medicare and you'd like to share your thoughts, how it's affected you, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. What questions do you have about Medicare? How can it be improved? And what do we need to do to ensure that it is sustained for people in the future, as we got, 10,000 people turn 65 every day in this country. So a lot of people are going to rely on Medicare. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Ruthann in El Cerrito. Hi, Ruthann. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. I'm a disabled person who has had Medicare for the past 30 years. And I can't speak highly enough of how much I'm appreciative of having it. And one concern is that people, either radio or newsprint, neglect sometimes to include those of us with disabilities as beneficiaries. But what I'd like to bring up to ask either Dr. Khan, who I've interviewed before, and Dr. Angel, who I've communicated with, is their thoughts on expanding it and improving it, because the only bugaboo I've run into has been limitations, like the caps Medicare has on how much physical therapy you can get in a year, or how little they reimburse psychiatrists for therapy, or I was trying to see a speech therapist for neuropsychiatric therapy, and she told me that the reimbursements were so low that no people are taking more Medicare patients. So this is not to bash Medicare, it's only to ask, because I've had such positive experience with it, is what are your thoughts on expanding it? It also does not include dental. So whereas I don't have to pay to go to the orthopedic surgeon or my primary care doctor or a dermatologist, it's really very difficult to see some of the other folks.
All right. Well, thank you for the question, yeah. Ruth Ann. Dr. Angel?
Yes, this is a very important point. As I said at the beginning, Medicare isn't perfect. And in a nutshell, the problem is that even though Medicare is a very efficient payment system, insurance system, it's a single-payer insurance system, it still uses the same profit-driven delivery system. And that refers to the large hospitals, to the freestanding clinics, to the highly paid specialists. We have the only delivery system really in the world, or in the advanced world, that is driven by profits. So since Medicare has to use that same delivery system, the prices for services are way too high, which means that Medicare is increasing co-payments, is cutting back. It's still much better than the private system, but it is using the same delivery system, which is overpriced. And I think that's what the caller is referring to. I think that's why she's seeing benefits become skimpier, because it uses the delivery system. So in my opinion, the fundamental change to Medicare, well, twofold. One, it should be expanded decade at a time. Instead of starting at 65, it should start at 55, do that for a few years, and down to 45, and eventually we would have Medicare for all. But the second reform would be to get rid of the profit motive in the delivery of health care. There is no earthly reason why people should make profits out of people's illnesses. In public schools, for example, we don't say, well, if you want to go to fifth grade at your public school, you have to have a piece of plastic, and that might entitle you to learn English and history, but you wouldn't get to learn math, because we don't cover that. But we do something like that in healthcare. We consider it an industry, a business, and we should stop doing that. We should see it as a social service, a part of what any decent country gives to its people.
Dr. Khan, what would you add to that?
Well, I concur completely with what Dr. Angel said, and I would just add that what Medicare is the closest we have to a single-payer system. We can't really have a single-payer system until we have one single payer. So as Medicare expands to include other decades, the role of the many other health insurers, mostly private, would fade away. And a doctor's office, instead of dealing with often dozens or hundreds of health plans, which means that they're spending about 10 cents on the dollar beyond what they should just to deal with the paperwork, that would all go away, and you would take those 10 cents and put it into the additional care that people may not be getting now. So what we want to do is take all of our health care dollars and put it into care and get rid of the unnecessary waste.
And I should mention, we just got word last week that Anthem wants to buy Cigna for $54 billion, which would create the nation's largest insurer. Dr. Angel, what was your response when you heard about this news?
Well, what I'm seeing now is a massive struggle for profits, for revenue. Even the nonprofits in our system behave like for profits. A massive struggle between the insurers and the giant hospital complexes, which the hospitals are now buying up physicians groups, and they are depending on these physicians groups to refer their patients to the hospitals for high-priced elective services, essentially. And so the insurers are saying, no, wait a minute, that costs too much, your prices are too high, you know, Mr. Hospital. And Mr. Hospital says, you can't not use us. We are the most prestigious hospital in New York City, and so, Mr. Insurer, you're going to have to pay our price whether you like it or not. So you're seeing these hospital conglomerates in the major cities get bigger and bigger and bigger and buy up all of the outpatient facilities and all of the physician groups. At the same time, the insurers, who have to, they feel, defend themselves, are joining up and merging. And that's what you're seeing, giant insurers merging so that they will have more clout with the huge hospital conglomerations. Now, note that the people who are forgotten in this are the individual patients and the individual doctors, mm-hmm. who are just pawns in this game of commerce between the insurers and the hospital conglomerates.
Dr. Khan?
And I would just add that these kinds of changes that Dr. Angel and I are proposing are not hypothetical. There is a group called the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. It's the wealthy democracies, and all of the other wealthy democracies have something like Medicare for All. The details vary, but we know for sure that one can provide extremely high-quality medical care, that outcomes can be actually better than in the United States, and saving money. And I take heart in what Winston Churchill said, the Americans can be trusted to do the right thing after having tried everything else.
Right. We tend to think of Medicare as being for people over 65, mm-hmm. which it is in terms of the health care, and it's certainly rescued older people from poverty when it was instituted 50 years ago, because that's at an age where they're starting to get ill and they were paying for it out of pocket, and so Medicare just saved them from poverty. But what I think we often forget nowadays is there is a generation called the sandwich generation. As generations get longer, you have people, say, late 40s, 50, who are taking care of their parents and their teenage children simultaneously. They're having a hard time. And so they have an interest in Medicare, too. If they had to go back to the way it was before 1965 and pay for the health care of their parents and grandparents, they would be in big trouble. Mm. So middle-aged people have an interest in Medicare, too. And along the same lines, Obamacare, the ACA, actually permits insurers to charge three times as much for older people as for younger people. So if you're in your late 50s or early 60s, according to the ACA, your premiums could be three times as high as if you were, say, 30. Mm. So that my idea, and other people have the same idea, of dropping the Medicare age a decade at a time and starting going down to 55, I think would be a real help for these people, because in their 50s, people are starting to get chronic illnesses. The premiums would be three times as high. These are the people who would most benefit from extending Medicare downward.
Dr. Angel, how could that be done politically to bring the age down to 55?
You know, I think I think that in terms of the public, in poll after poll, they would like nothing better
right.
than to have this. The public approves of extending Medicare, of Medicare for all. The problem is that Congress is pretty much bought and paid for by the private healthcare industry, and they're not going along with what the public would like. So I think the importance of radio shows like yours is to tell the public to put pressure on their Congress people, because the only thing members of Congress need more than money from private industry is votes.
Mm.
And if the votes were to say, no, you must do this, then I think Congress would go along. But it's not the people. It's not the public. Politically, they're with us.
Dr. Marcia Angel is senior lecturer in social medicine at Harvard Medical School, former editor-in-chief of the New England Journal of Medicine, and author of The Truth About the Drug Companies, How They Deceive Us and What to Do About It. Dr. James Kahn is professor of health policy and epidemiology at UCSF and past president of the California chapter of Physicians for a National Health Program. Today, we are marking the 50th anniversary of Medicare by talking about its past, present, and future. If you're on Medicare and you'd like to share stories, we'd love to hear from you. What questions do you have? What will it take to preserve this program and expand it for everyone? 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's go next to Tina in Oakland. Hi, Tina. Welcome to the show.
Actually, it was Gina.
Oh, hi, Gina. Sorry about that.
Yes, I've been on disability for many years and had Medicare, and now I'm over 65, so I've been very thankful for it. However, I'm very holistically minded, and so when I go in to see a regular allopath, I feel like I'm in a foreign country. So I would like the AMA to expand and be less rigid, to open its doors to other mediums of expression, shall we say, that deal with the root cause rather than symptoms of the body. And that's my ache and pain. I'm on a fixed income, and I am on basic needs income, so I'm in so-called poverty now, even if I have Medicare.
Mm.
So, and dental is a real big dent. I mean, that's a real something that's left out, that's very big. So, you know, the older you get, the more you need that kind of thing. So Medi-Cal is very deficient in covering, you know, charges for dental. So we're kind of left in the lurch there.
Mm. Well, thank you for calling. Dr. Kahn, do you want to take that?
Well, first of all, regarding dental, I couldn't agree more. I think it's ridiculous and needs to be remedied that we consider dental care to be different and somehow optional. That's just not true for a variety of reasons. In terms of alternative types of care, I think we're in a little bit of a conundrum. I think that it makes, to me, it makes a very good sense to cover any care for which there is reasonable evidence that it provides benefits, and we want to be generous in that. But there needs to be some boundary there, and I certainly would support exploring that. For me, the first step, though, is to get full coverage of the honestly very expensive care that has been shown to work, and then take it from there.
All right, and I'll get Dr. Angel to comment right after a break. Today on Your Call, we are marking the 50th anniversary of Medicare. We'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on KALW, a show that relies on engaged listeners. You can join today's conversation by calling 866-798-TALK. That's toll-free, 866-798-8255. Or you can post a comment or question at yourcallradio.org, where you'll also find links related to today's show. And coming up on World Have Your Say from the BBC, they'll be talking about Turkey and the Islamic State, doping, and the Tour de France winner, as well as President Obama's trip to Africa. That's at 11 o'clock here on Local Public Radio, KALW, San Francisco.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will talk about details of the Iran deal. After months of negotiations, Iran has agreed to limit its nuclear activities in return for the lifting of crippling sanctions. So what are the deal's key provisions, and how will this agreement affect the lives of the Iranian people? That question has really not been tackled in most media coverage. And then on Wednesday, Rick O'Berry, former trainer of the Flipper Dolphins turned dolphin advocate, will be here to talk about the state of dolphins around the world. The slaughter in Taiji, Japan, is expected to start in less than 30 days, so we will also talk about that. And then we're also putting together a show about transportation in a crowded metropolis. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we are talking about the 50th anniversary of Medicare. Medicare now covers 46 million people over 65 and 9 million adults who qualify for Medicare because of a permanent disability. And if you're on Medicare and you have a story to share, if you have any questions about Medicare and how it can be expanded, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we're joined by Dr. James Kahn, professor of health policy and epidemiology at UCSF, past president of the California chapter of Physicians for a National Health Program. Dr. Marcia Angel is senior lecturer in social medicine at Harvard Medical School, former editor-in-chief of the New England Journal of Medicine, and author of The Truth About the Drug Companies, How They Deceive Us and What to Do About It. And Dr. Angel, did you have anything to add on Gina's question about holistic health care or alternatives?
I agree with Dr. Kahn completely. You have to remember that when Medicare began in 1965, the benefits were patterned on the benefits that younger people would want. People over 65 didn't live as long as they do now, and it was assumed that the usual acute care benefits was what was needed, what was appropriate. But now, as people are living longer, and what we're seeing is people afflicted by chronic ailments that last for years, things like arthritis, for example, who have problems with their eyesight, with hearing, dental problems, we're seeing that the benefit package needs to be a little broader, more directed toward the problems that old people have, and less patterned on the kind of medical care that young people have. So I agree completely that benefits should be expanded. They should include dental care. You know, when it started, they didn't even include prescription drugs because there weren't that many and they weren't that effective. Now that's crucial, and the Part D is a gift to the drug companies more than it is to Medicare recipients. They just made a terrible mistake in that legislation, saying that the government, Medicare, could not bargain for lower prescription drug costs. But at least you get something now. So I agree with Dr. Kahn. We need broader benefits, but we still get something from Medicare.
All right. Well, thank you again for calling in, Gina. Let's go next to Don in San Francisco. Hi, Don. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you. For people who do want to expand Medicare, there's a demonstration this Thursday in Oakland at Frankel-Gawa Plaza starting at 11 o'clock. It'll be for protecting and expanding. There is a bill in Congress called H.R. 676 that has 49 co-sponsors, including Barbara Lee, calling for a national health care system for Medicare for all. And I want to have just one sentence on the racist nature of American health care. Every 80 minutes in this country, a black person dies because of not having access to health care, not being insured in one form or another. That's it.
All right. Well, thank you for that. We have done shows about how mostly, I think all of them actually, Republican governors are not taking federal subsidies to provide health care to mostly poor people in the South and the Midwest, and an overwhelming percentage of them are Black. Dr. Connor, Dr. Angel, do you see this changing at all now that we actually have the numbers and there's been quite a bit of media attention on this? Just about these governors not taking federal subsidies to provide care for people.
The original Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, it was contemplating expanding the number of people covered by about 32 million. And about half of those were going to be through the expansion of Medicaid. And the states would expand that, all of the states, and the federal government, for 3 years at least, would pay for 100% of that. What happened was the Supreme Court said that the states didn't have to do that. And so a lot of these states, with Republican governors mainly, and Republican legislatures, said, we're not going to do that, even though it's free for 3 years. We're not going to do that. Now, at any time, they can change their minds, and I suspect they will. They'll have to eat some crow. they'll have to explain themselves to their base, but they're going to do it. It's just too good a deal. The other half, the other 16 million, most of that had to do with setting up these state exchanges where you could go online and you could find health insurance and you would get subsidies for that. And a lot of the states, most states, did not set those up. And instead, they were using the backup, which was a federal exchange. Now, the Supreme Court in this case said that the state exchanges would be treated the same as the federal exchanges. So I think that the subsidies for poor people using these state exchanges, that will go forward. But still, Obamacare left millions of people without coverage.
Right.
Millions. It was by no means universal care.
And thank you for calling, Don, with the information about this rally. Again, 11 to 1 on Thursday, Frank Ogawa Plaza in Oakland. Dr. Khan, Don talked about legislation, and you testified in front of the California Assembly Health Committee in 2010, talking about how much money would actually go to health care if it wasn't spent on administrative costs. At the time, $30 billion in California. And Medicare for All, a single-payer system, was vetoed a couple of times by then-Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. It has not passed under Governor Jerry Brown. Why not? And do you see that having any traction under Brown? He hasn't said, I don't think, publicly where he stands on Medicare for All in California.
Well, as you know, the Democrats have a supermajority in the California legislature, and that would set the stage for progressive legislation like single payer. But the competing force, which is quite strong, is that the ACA was passed mainly with Democratic support. And we have heard from multiple quarters that the Democrats want to fall in line supporting the ACA. And so those of us who support single payer, while we recognize the very severe limitations of the ACA, we also want to be patient and let those severe limitations become more evident to the Democrats in Sacramento. And, of course, we will hope to apply pressure in key legislative districts as well, and hope that eventually we see that we can think of the ACA as the beta, very poor beta version of Medicare for All, and then move to a proper single-payer Medicare for All system, in which case we think the Democrats will support that.
And so does this have to go through the legislature, or could it be brought to the voters?
It can be done either way.
It would be very expensive if it were brought to the voters.
Expensive in terms of
because you'd have health insurance industry spending tens of millions of dollars to fight it.
Right. Absolutely. To mount a successful initiative campaign, you're talking about needing tens of millions of dollars.
Right. All right. Well, thank you again for the call, Don. Let's go next to Alex in San Francisco. Hi, Alex.
Hi there. Your guest, thank you so much for having this conversation. I think it's a great discussion. And your guest did a great job at rebutting one of the major arguments for maintaining this privatized system, you know, saying, like, the big argument is privatized systems create competition, which drives healthcare costs down. But I think your guest did a great job kind of saying that, no, that's actually not the case. And my question was, you know, what are some of the other major arguments for maintaining a private healthcare system in the United States? And does the data or the realities actually support these claims? Like, do you have any comments kind of rebutting these major arguments?
Well, we hear that similar arguments that were heard back in 1965 at the time the American Medical Association branded Medicare as, quote, socialized medicine. I mean, we hear this constantly and lobbied lawmakers aggressively not to pass it. And the AMA left pamphlets in doctors' offices warning that the government would make decisions about their next doctor's visit. I mean, we keep hearing that today. Dr. Angel, what other arguments are you hearing and how do you respond to them?
Well, I think the principal argument is, and this is not a genuine argument, but is an appeal to the American mythology, which is the private sector is always more efficient. And that is just said as an assertion, despite all of the evidence, at least in healthcare, to the contrary. So it's a sort of a knee-jerk, you know, let the private sector do it, let the private sector do it, because it's what Americans like to believe. And, of course, the private sector is, you know, terrific at cereal and toothpaste and stuff like that. It is not good at social services like healthcare. But it's that is what is said. And I think the problem for the rest of us is it's very hard for people who are not expert in this area to have the courage of their convictions to say, no, you're wrong. So I think that's the overwhelming thing. Then, of course, the real argument is that investors in the health industry and the executives of the health industry, they make out like bandits. So that's the real argument.
Dr. Khan?
No, I agree with that. And I think it's useful to think about what's going on in healthcare as having different functions. And there are functions that I think private industry is well suited for. Innovation, for example, developing new classes of drugs, I think is what the private industry is especially good at and should be encouraged and allowed to do that as they have been doing. But when you're talking about just making sure that the money is moving to the people who need it to get health care, that's what government is very good at. We all get our Social Security checks. And we trust the government to do that. And they do it. The government does it very well. Similarly, Medicare works very well. So let's not fall into the trap of thinking that the private sector is best for everything. It's best for certain things. My iPhone, I'm glad that Apple exists. But for other things, the government is best.
And we talked about the Anthem Cigna deal. Joseph Swedish, Anthem CEO, is making $8 million a year. And David Cordani, CEO of Cigna, is making $27 million a year, $104,000 a day.
I have to check, but I think that's more than I make.
Not earning.
Earning, thank you. Yes, people have written me that before. Earning, you're right. Thank you for that. Dr. Marsha?
No, I think making is much better than earning because they're not earning it. Nobody could earn that. So it's just a sort of a mark of how crazy our system has gotten, how outlandish the rewards of the executives are compared with what they actually contribute to healthcare.
And we'll put information about this at yourcallradio.org. Dr. Marsha Angel is senior lecturer in social medicine at Harvard Medical School. Dr. James Khan is professor of health policy and epidemiology at UCSF. And now I would like to welcome Donna Smith to the show. Donna Smith is coordinator of the Medicare Turns 50 events across the United States, executive director of Healthcare for All California. She was also featured in Michael Moore's Sicko documentary, and she's got a blog by that name. It is donnasicko.blogspot.com. Hi, Donna. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's been great listening to everybody.
Well, it's great to have you. We got a call, Don, who does a lot of work. I get his emails on Medicare for All. They're constantly leafleting at events throughout the Bay Area. They've got one planned for Thursday from 11 to 1 at Frank Agawa Plaza in Oakland. What else is happening across the country?
Well, there's a wide range of things going on all over the country. There's at least 60 cities where there are actions happening supporting Medicare for All. One of the things that we all agreed on, that Medicare is as American as apple pie, and therefore we're using that pie information to be protect, improve, and expand Medicare. So pie becomes a way for us all to communicate how much we believe the Medicare program needs to be protected and expanded. So we have events like happening in Oakland that actually goes from 11 to about 145. You also can see the insurance commissioner, Dave Jones, will be there. Betty Yee is going to be there. There's going to be a lot of wonderful people there, along with tremendous numbers of nurses. You know how important the nurses are in California and all over the country. But we also have people, for instance, to give you an example, in Bloomington, Indiana, where they're going to be doing an actual pie event where they're serving pie to people who come by and talk to them. We've got other people who are doing events at Major League Baseball games where they're holding banners and flags. And we have all sorts of creative things going on in cities all over the country. So people can find out more information on either the National Nurses United site, or they can go to MedicareTurns50.org, or they can go to healthcare-now.org to get lists of events and to find one in their area, because it is so important, as Dr. Angel said, for everyone to be as well informed as you can be. Take your story and stories from your community and get them to your elected officials so that they can start doing the work that we elected them to do, which is to protect us all and not the special interest.
And Donna, at a time when Medicare has overwhelming support, over 90% of the population believes it should be strengthened and expanded, and yet you have some of these presidential hopefuls on the Republican side. Jeb Bush, for example, said he wanted to, quote, phase out Medicare. His spokesman told Bloomberg that he really didn't believe that. What he believes in, he wants to raise the retirement age and force wealthier beneficiaries to pay more. Representative Paul Ryan wants to convert Medicare into a voucher system. I mean, this is what we see on the Republican side. So what are your thoughts about what it will actually take to expand it? Do you think it has to start at the state level?
Well, I think that's part of it. And let me say, I'm the executive director of Healthcare for All Colorado. I'm sitting here in Denver today. And what's interesting to me is I'm a 60-year-old female, and I'm living proof of what's happening right now under the Affordable Care Act. I pay $646 a month for coverage that I have to buy on the state exchange, and I'm very unhappy about that. And if you talk to me about, and anyone else in my age group, about raising the age of Medicare eligibility to 67, or some people are even mentioning 70 as an age, it is an awful thing to think about, how long I might have to endure this kind of insurance rate, and I don't dare go without insurance. But still, the coverage that many 60-year-olds can get, even at $646 a month, is pretty bad. I have a $6,250 maximum out-of-pocket. That's a lot of money to put into health care. So when you hear people like Jeb Bush, who immediately had pushback, of course, because of all the people who support Medicare, he had immediately had pushback and had to walk back from his statements a little bit and say, I didn't really mean that I wanted to phase out Medicare. Well, yes, they do. That's right. Exactly what they mean. They mean they do want to make Medicare more privatized, which would be just deadly for the program, in terms, because then it would be subject to the same kinds of pressures, just like it is in the Medicare Advantage plans, subject to the same kinds of pressures we all see in private insurance companies, where they're worried about controlling where you go, which providers you see, jamming you into small networks of people where you can go get your care, you know, providing only for certain kinds of procedures and treatments and not necessarily what you and your doctor would like to see done. It's just it's a very scary proposition, and to wait until we all can push to get Medicare for All is not a good thing. We have to push back now. There's no one on the Republican side who's waiting, and to be very honest, there's an awful lot of Democrats who sometimes don't stand up as strongly as they need to defend this program and to make it not only to preserve it, but to make it stronger so that it lasts for many generations. Insurance executives understand that the best way to strengthen any pool of the insured is to get everybody in the pool. So if you want to make Medicare truly strong for generations to come, the best way to make it strong and to ensure the health of everybody in this country is to improve it and expand it to everyone. Let's get everybody in.
Well, and Dr. Khan, at a time when 10,000 people turn 65 every day in this country, this program is going to I don't want to say burst, that sounds kind of negative, but a lot of people are going to rely on Medicare. So what are your concerns as so many people turn 65 in this country and need a lot of care?
Well, as I said earlier, one of my concerns about Medicare is that the federal government continues to bend to the will of the private insurers who like Medicare Part C, which is the privately run capitated portion, and that's been subsidized every year to the tune of about $35 billion. And that's not a sustainable thing. You really need to go back to the original way that Medicare was working. And the other concern is, as the other guest said, there really is a push among the Republicans to push Medicare toward a more private payment model like vouchers, where the fixed amount of money per enrollee, and then that fixed amount of money might not actually do so well at paying the cost. So we need to maintain the basic principles of Medicare, which are that everyone who's eligible is covered for all the services they need, and the administrative costs are kept low, and the profit motive is kept out of the financing there.
And Dr. Angel, what would you add to that? What concerns you about the future of Medicare?
Well, I think that the implication of your comment was that with all of these people coming into Medicare, we were going to be spending more and more on health care. But the truth is you have two choices. You're either in Medicare, I'm excluding Medicaid here, or you're in the private sector. And the costs of Medicare are rising more slowly than the costs in the private sector. So if you cut out some people from Medicare, say by raising the age, they're going to be getting their health care in the more expensive private sector. So why not have all these new people go into the least expensive part of the system? And moreover, as the prices in Medicare rise more slowly, the cost, with time, that difference between Medicare and the private sector, and the private sector is now increasing its insurance premiums greatly, you're going to see that the inflationary aspects are lower in Medicare than they are in the private sector. Moreover, with time, you're not going to be spending, the public won't be spending more on Medicare, because Medicare will be, the cost of that, the increased cost, would be offset by the savings in premiums and out-of-pocket costs. So it isn't just the right way, but it's the least expensive way to have all of these new people go into Medicare instead of into the treacherous private sector.
I'd like to just bring in a quick note of ethics. In universities like UCSF, when we do research on human subjects, we need to get approval from an oversight committee. And one of the things we need to demonstrate to the oversight committee is that we don't know which medicine is best. There are two medicines. We don't know which is best. This is called equipoise. We can't do the research unless there's that uncertainty. But we do know which kind of health insurance is best. We have all this evidence from the other wealthy democracies. I put out to my other guests and the audience that continuing to experiment on people and not doing the best system there is simply unethical. It's a matter of right and wrong.
And we also have a number of emails, just quickly on one related on cost. Henry says that in the 4 years he's been on Medicare, he's been surprised and dismayed at how much he has to pay in co-payments, more, it seems, than I used to pay when I had health insurance from employers. He recently had his hip replaced. It cost $540, $55 for each of three x-rays. He says, I'm sure these add up to less than the cost of the care. I'm fortunate enough to be able to afford these charges, but they add up. More, I'm sure, than many people can afford. So isn't it important to cut these costs?
I agree, absolutely. I think it should be not only Medicare for all, but in a nonprofit delivery system and first dollar coverage. I don't think there should be co-payments and deductibles. Why should you pay for the privilege of being sick?
And final thoughts from you, Donna. What will it take to really strengthen this and expand it?
I think it takes the people of this country really standing up in a very loud way and saying we're not going to stand for this anymore. I know that my family certainly reaches the breaking point every month when we put out that $646 a month. In comparison to my husband, who is 71 and does have Medicare coverage and does have a supplemental policy he pays for, it provides him with first dollar coverage. So the people of this country get loud enough. We have to be loud enough to overcome some of the moneyed interests, and that can be hard to do unless there is a good volume of us. So turn out to these events this Thursday, and let's let those people like Paul Ryan and Jeb Bush and any others who may have any inclination that they don't want to protect Medicare, that they don't want to improve it, and they don't want to expand it, let's let them know that we really want them to do that, that that's not only in our own personal best interest, but it's in the best interest of this nation, and it's the only real way we're going to get costs under control and that we're going to provide for a healthy populace for all of us. We can do it, but we have to be loud, we have to be enough of us, and we have to try and speak with a voice that's very clear that we won't put you into office again if you're going to work in your own self-interest of being reelected by private interest money rather than our interests in getting us Medicare for all.
And it's also important to push the media to ask these questions from these candidates. Again, there's a Medicare rally on Thursday, 11 to 1 at Frankagawa Plaza in Oakland, and Donna Smith is coordinator of the Medicare Turns 50 events across the country and executive director of Healthcare for All Colorado. Dr. James Kahn is professor of health policy and epidemiology at UCSF, past president of the California chapter of Physicians for National Health Program. Dr. Marcia Angel is senior lecturer in social medicine at Harvard and author of The Truth About the Drug Companies, How They Deceive Us and What to Do About It. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.